So good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. Thanks for being here. Before I begin, I'll give you a little report on Tim and Dawu's baby. I just got an email from Tim, 4:45 California time, 15 minutes ago. No, 45 minutes ago at this point. The surgery went as expected. The baby is now off any sort of heart-lung machine, though he's breathing 100% oxygen through a tube. They are monitoring his recovery. We'll see him soon. We heard about how this morning's Zazen was dedicated to us. Thank you and the Sangha so much. We are incredibly lucky to have so much love. From Tim. So we have a new baby in the Sangha. We don't know a name yet, I guess. And this operation, which was a serious operation, was completely anticipated. So everything apparently went as planned. Also, some of you might know Judy Dalen from our sister Sangha up in Salt Spring Island. She had a major operation today and seems to be doing well also. Yesterday, I guess, actually. And she's doing well today, resting well. So, it is great to see everybody after a long break. Maybe we don't need that break anymore. I don't know. We've always had it, but we'll see what we do next year. Anyway, I missed you all. It's nice to be back. And wasn't really a break because we had a class on Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and everybody said it was a pretty great class. And thanks to all of our teachers who participated in that class. I heard a lot of good things about it. Besides being the day of the birth of a new Sangha member, it's also, as you might realize, Hiroshima Day. This is the day 80 years ago to this day, that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, Japan. Pretty sobering day. It also happens to be August the 6th, Kathy and my 49th wedding anniversary. We were married on Hiroshima Day. So, happy anniversary to us. And this is the best way for me to spend my anniversary with all of you guys. Perfect. So, we're going to study for a while, a little while here, the Gandavyuha Sutra. Sometimes this text is called the Gandavyuha Sutra, but it's also known as the 39th chapter, the final chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, and called Entry into the Realm of Reality. So it's got both titles, the Gandavyuha Sutra when it's considered as a separate text, and Entry into the Realm of Reality when it's considered as the 39th and final chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, which it is. Now, I don't know if you guys have been dipping into this text, but taken as a whole, the Avatamsaka Sutra is one of the most amazing religious documents the world has ever produced. I don't know that there's anything anywhere quite like it. It's somewhat like, of course, the other Mahayana sutras, but way over the top. We have, as far as I'm aware, at least two English translations. One is done by the community of the 10,000, City of 10,000 Buddhas, that has a translation committee and does lots of translations of sutras from Chinese versions. And that is available on their website. But the one that I usually read is by the great translator Thomas Cleary. And that's the one that we have a link to on our website. Thanks to Laura for locating that link. I didn't know that you could get that sutra electronically, but you can. The sutra was published a while ago by Shambhala. It kind of looked like this in the original edition. My guess is there is only the original edition. It was in three volumes, two big fat volumes, and a third volume, which is also about a 400-page or so book, which is the Gandavyuha. So three volumes. And it's probably still available. Certainly, I actually didn't check to see if it's available as a new book purchase, but it's probably available. It's floating around somewhere as a used book, I'm sure. Just to say in a word that I am really in awe of Thomas Cleary. He was an amazing person. He was kind of like a recluse, very strange and quiet person. But it is not an exaggeration to say that he was probably the greatest Buddhist translator in history. People talk about Kumarajiva and all these great translators in Tibet and throughout history who were great translators, but they almost always had translation bureaus working with them. Cleary worked alone, as far as I'm aware. And the sheer output of Cleary is absolutely staggering. I think he's probably translated more stuff than anybody else in Buddhist history. You could spend your life translating the Avatamsaka Sutra because it's thousands of pages long. So if somebody spent a lifetime and that's what they did, is translate the Avatamsaka Sutra, that would be an achievement. But in addition to this, Cleary has translated the Blue Cliff Record with all of its commentary, the Book of Serenity with all of its commentary, and many, many, many other Zen and Asian religious texts, and even some Muslim texts, all kinds of stuff. I don't even know the scope of what he's done. So the Zen world and the world of religion owes a tremendous debt to Thomas Cleary, who died a few years ago. In years gone by, when we would be taking up a new sutra, I would be pouring through different books and trying to, in the introductory meeting like the one tonight, I want to kind of give you an overview, kind of an introduction to the sutra. So usually I would be pouring through books and spending a lot of time on this. However, not anymore. Nobody has to do this anymore because Wikipedia already did it for us. Wikipedia and probably AI will do the same thing. So all I had to do was go to Wikipedia and find out everything you need to know about the Avatamsaka Sutra. So I recommend that you do that too. Wikipedia is an amazing source, and support them because it's really extraordinary. So now I'm going to tell you some background about the Avatamsaka Sutra, all of which, every word of which you can find more or less on the Wikipedia site. If you type in Avatamsaka Sutra, you'll get this page. So now I'm basically quoting to you. I'll have a few comments, but I'm more or less quoting to you from that source. The sutra, among the longest Buddhist sutras, is a compilation of disparate texts on various topics, such as the Bodhisattva path, the interpenetration of phenomena, the omnipresence of Buddhahood, the miraculous powers of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the visionary powers of meditation, and the equality of things in emptiness. That's a pretty potent list. According to Paul Demiavia, who's an early French Buddhist scholar, the Avatamsaka collection is, this is quoting him, characterized by overflowing visionary images which multiply everything to infinity, by a type of monadology that teaches the interpenetration of the one whole in the particularized many of spirit and matter, and by the notion of a gradual progress toward liberation through successive stages, and an obsessive preferences for images of light and radiance. Alan Fox has described the sutra's worldview as fractal, holographic, and psychedelic. And you will find that immediately when you open the pages. The East Asian Buddhist view of the text is that it expresses the infinite universe as seen by a Buddha. And the infinite universe seen by a Buddha is called the Dharmadhatu. A Buddha who sees all phenomena as empty and thus infinitely interpenetrating from the point of view of enlightenment. So the Buddha doesn't see the same world that we see. This interpenetration is described in the sutra as the perception that, and here is quoting from the sutra, I guess, that the fields full of assemblies, the beings and eons which are as many as all the dust particles, all are present in every particle of dust. Thus, a Buddha's view of reality is also said to be inconceivable. No sentient being can fathom it. And yet, as I said, the Avatamsaka Sutra proposes to somehow describe it. Luis O. Gomez notes that there is another more contemporary Buddhist scholar, notes that there is an underlying order to the Avatamsaka collection. The discourses in the Sutra version, with 39 books, are delivered to 8 different audiences or 8 different assemblies in 7 locations, among them Bodh Gaya and Tushita the Heaven. So some of the locations are proposed to be physical places and some not. Each assembly includes various locales, doctrinal topics, and characters. And now, the Wikipedia lists the 8 assemblies, and in doing so, gives you a kind of summary of the whole of the sutra. And I'm gonna share that with you. But before I do, I'm gonna say a word about Huayan school of Buddhism, which is a uniquely Chinese form of Buddhism, which was also transmitted to Japan and I think Korea, probably Vietnam. And that's a form of Buddhism based on the Avatamsaka Sutra. The Huayan school and the Huayan teachings is to the Avatamsaka Sutra as Nagarjuna, and you might remember we studied Nagarjuna with Kathy this spring, as Nagarjuna is to the Prajnaparamita Sutras. In other words, a kind of systematization or rationalization of a more poetic, mythical, and impressionistic teaching. And this is a very typical thing in all religions, where you have primary texts which really have a lot of spiritual potency, but they're not necessarily trying to be consistent or logical. And then you have people who come along somewhat later who are scholars or adepts, and they want to make commentaries on this text and sort of straighten out all the problems. So the primary religious texts are really inspiring, but they usually raise a lot of questions. They're usually full of inconsistencies and all sorts of... That's how come people can have such vastly different views of what the Bible says, you know, and so on. So that's typical. And then it's also typical that scholars, theologians, other commentators come along and try to straighten everything out and answer the questions. And a lot of times in the process, they shut off the questions that should not have been shut off. But it happens all the time. And so this is what Huayan Buddhism did for the Avatamsaka Sutra. It clarified it into a set of teachings abstracted from the very long, colorful, and probably unwieldy sutra. So this is a very famous thing in Huayan Buddhism. This is by created by Fazang, who's one of the famous creators of that school. Fazang built, the Empress Wu of China wanted to understand these teachings, and Fazang made a demonstration for her by creating a hall of mirrors, a room that was only mirrors, you know, ceiling, walls, floor, mirrors. And in the center of this mirrored room, he placed a Buddha image and a lamp. And when the Empress walked into the room, it was a dazzling sight. Wherever she looked, she saw the Buddha reflected in infinite regress. Buddha within Buddha within Buddha within Buddha within Buddha to infinity wherever she looked. And this demonstrated the teaching of interpenetration that was mentioned several times a minute ago. The interpenetration of the one and the many, of the particular and the universal. All in each one in all. A grain of sand contains the whole trichiliocosm, and the whole trichiliocosm is here in the palm of Buddha's hand. And maybe that teaching sounds kind of familiar to us because it's really one of the main teachings in Zen, although usually Zen doesn't use that term, interpenetration, but you hear it a lot in Zen. The Sandokai, one of our primary texts in Soto Zen, really amounts to that. The merging of difference and unity, the merging of universal in particular. And Dogen is always giving us expressions that refer to this. And over again in various ways. You'll hear it in Shobo Genzo fascicles. For us, it means, and we really take it this way to heart, that in our one brief, little, seemingly not that significant life, all of life is present. And that in every moment of our life, all of our life and all of life is there in that moment. And that's why Zen is so emphasizing all the time the present moment. But in Zen, the present moment is not just be here now. The present moment is be everywhere forever, in addition to be here now. And be here now is the same as be everywhere forever in Zen. And again, this, I think, is kind of experiential for us, because when Zazen is your life's practice, when you sit every day and you sit sessions and, you know, Zazen is something that is pervading your life, you get a feeling for what all this is. You get a feeling for that in your daily living. Now, I don't mean that, you know, you're going around in your kitchen as if it was a psychedelic hall of mirrors. I don't mean that. I don't mean some kind of like, you know, big, boffo, amazing visual or kinetic experience. But I think we do get, as time goes on, a sense of the awesome power and scope of what it means to be in this life. This becomes something we kind of understand as we go on. So that was my little editorial aside and wanting to introduce you to the Huayan School, which is not referenced in the Wikipedia page. So now I'm going back to the Wikipedia page, which gives you the 8 assemblies. Now, just to be clear, we're not going to go through, I'm giving you the whole of the, this is a summary of the whole of the Avatamsaka Sutra, which we're not going to read. We're just going to read the end. But I thought it would be worthwhile to kind of let you know where this text fits in. So 39 books, 8 locations. 7 locations, I mean 8 assemblies. So books 1-6 take place in the Bodhimanda. The Bodhimanda is this sort of term for the seat of awakening that the Buddha sat on under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, in India, a place you can go if you wanted to. So that's where the first six books take place. And so the sutra is telling us that the Avatamsaka Sutra that we're about to read is the first teaching that the Buddha gave. Immediately after the Buddha awakened, he had the whole cosmic teaching that he gave. And this is something that the Huayan Sutra makes explicit, the Huayan school makes explicit. They say that actually the Buddhist teaching didn't begin with the early teachings of the Pali Canon, which historically we would say are earlier in our concept of history. No, the Buddha actually began with the Avatamsaka Sutra. But when he taught the Avatamsaka Sutra, these thousands of pages, he just sort of like, you know, went out with it. It just destabilized everybody. No, nobody could handle it. It was too overwhelming for everybody. So the Buddha said, oh, wait, you know, I guess they don't get it. So that's when he started teaching the Pali Canon, Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, and all this stuff that's very easy to understand and that people could get with. But as of the time of the teaching of the Avatamsaka Sutra, none of those teachings had yet been given. And so the Buddha is seated in an assembly among vast numbers of bodhisattvas and all kinds of other beings here at the Seat of Enlightenment, which is depicted both as an historical place as well as a transcendent palace filled with multicolored jewels and lights. And in these first six books, various bodhisattvas, including Samantabhadra and the Buddha, discuss the nature of reality, the infinity of the universe, how Buddhahood is omnipresent throughout the universe. So the whole universe is actually one vast Buddha field, and how the bodhisattvas fill the countless worlds in the universe. Book 6 discusses the Buddha Vairochana and his vow to reach Buddhahood long ago and the path of practice of that particular cosmic Buddha Vairochana. The second assembly is called, or location, is called the Hall of Universal Light. And this is the setting for books 7 through 12. And this assembly is located in that place, the Hall of Universal Light, which is a grand palace coextensive with the Bodhimanda. In this set of books, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom, Manjushri, shows up and the Buddha empowers him, zaps him, to give various kinds of teachings. He teaches on the Four Noble Truths, and the Buddha sends a light from his feet that illuminates the 10 directions. Manjushri gives further teachings on bodhisattvas, on pure conduct. And the 11th chapter is a noteworthy chapter. It's called the Pure Practices chapter. And if you've ever heard of, like bodhisattva verses, for example, when you go to Tassajara, there's a verse at the bath that says something like, now that I bathe this body, I vow with all beings to purify all Buddha lands everywhere, something like that. So in other words, everything you do, brushing your teeth, taking a bath, washing your face, going to the toilet, walking on a narrow road, walking on a wide road, walking up a hill, walking down a hill, every occasion, there's a verse that you can say to dedicate the activity that you're doing for the awakening and well-being of everyone. And there's many, many pages of such verses in the Pure Practice chapter, chapter 11 of the Avatamsaka Sutra. So a lot of people actually write some of these down and use them. They're great practice verses to use on a daily basis. Thich Nhat Hanh, I think in his monastic training, used many of them, and he often speaks about them. Chapter 12, the Bodhisattva Bhadrashashri also teaches the Bodhisattva path and discusses bodhicitta, thought of enlightenment, in the almost like enthusiastic, almost conversion of recognizing the need to love all sentient beings and dedicate your life to freeing them all. So that he discusses faith, merit and virtue, and he recites a set of verses, which were used as a kind of Dharani in India, called the Dharani of the Jeweled Comet. I don't know about that one, but I guess for a while it was chanted a lot in India. The third location is Indra's palace. Indra is the chief of the gods, and that is the place where books 13 through 18 are taught. So Buddha still doesn't leave his place, but at the same time he's in his place, because of course Buddha can be in multiple places at the same time, so he doesn't have to leave one place to be in another place. He stays still in the Bodhimanda, but he also simultaneously ascends to Indra's palace in the Trayashrimsha heaven at the very top of Mount Sumeru. And when he gets there, Indra or Chakra praises him in verse. And many bodhisattvas fly there from all kind of other realms, and they also recite verses on the nature of reality, and they recite verses praising the Buddhas and the bodhisattvas. In book 15, a bodhisattva named Dharmamati shows up and teaches how the bodhisattva path progresses through 10 different abodes. Number one, awakening and aspiration to enlightenment. Number two, preparing the ground. Number three, cultivating the practices. Number four, noble birth, that is, you're born into the family of Buddhas. Number five, perfection of skillful means. Number six, rectification of the mind. Number seven, non-regression. Number eight, childlike simplicity. Number nine, crown prince of the Dharma, or princess of the Dharma, I guess. Number ten, consecration. So these are the 10 abodes that he teaches. And then teaches more on spiritual conduct and the importance of analytical inquiry for beginners on the path. In book 17, Dharmamati teaches about the arousing of the mind of awakening, the bodhicitta that we talked about a minute ago, which is a very precious moment on the bodhisattva path when you get it, that there is nothing else to be done but to tirelessly practice for the benefit of beings. And how great this bodhicitta is compared to anything, it's the greatest thing. In book 18, Dharmamati discusses the main practices of bodhisattvas, which in this case are heedfulness or diligence, apramada. You keep going. You do the best you can all the time. The 10 perfections, the 10 inexhaustible treasuries, and many others. The fourth location is Yama's palace. Yama is the god of death. So the Buddha goes there too. And once again, he's welcomed with many verses of praise. And 10 more bodhisattvas arrive and sing verses on the nature of reality, the nature of emptiness, the nature of mind. These verses also discuss how the world is a mental creation. And it includes the famous simile, which compares the mind to a painter and the world to be a painting. And this surely, don't you think, must be what Dogen had in mind in his famous fascicle Painting of a Rice Cake, one of his very important writings about language and representations of reality. And in that fascicle, he concludes that the only rice cakes that can satisfy hunger are painted rice cakes. And I'm sure he was thinking of this chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra with this metaphor. The mind is a painter and the world is its painting. In book 21, one of these bodhisattvas, Gunavana, teaches the 10 practices of bodhisattvas, which roughly correspond to the 10 paramitas. And as we know, the more usual list is the 6 paramitas, but there's also a list of 10 paramitas in this sutra. They are, number one, a giving delight, which is a little twist on dana paramita, bestowing benefits, and that's their translation or understanding of Shila Paramita, morality. Morality is bestowing benefits. Three, patience is called here non-resentment. Inexhaustible practice is number four. Transcending ignorance and confusion is number five, meditation. Skillful manifestation, upaya, is number six. Non-attachment, number seven. Veneration, meaning venerating the Buddha, is number eight. Cultivation of good qualities, number nine. And ten, cultivation of truth. In book 22, Gunavana teaches the 10 inexhaustible treasuries, which again is another list of 10, which summarizes the Bodhisattva's path from a different point of view. And here are the 10. Faith, ethical conduct, repentance, shame, and shame here is used in a positive sense, meaning to have remorse when you do bad stuff. You're not supposed to brush it off. You're supposed to feel bad about it. It's really good to feel bad in this case, right? So that's number four, shame. Number five, acquiring knowledge of the Dharma. Six, generosity. Seven, wisdom. Eight, mindfulness. Nine, being able to remember what you learned. And number 10, eloquence, meaning you're able to express the teaching. The fifth location is Tushita, the heaven. The heaven from which the Buddha is born and comes down to earth. So the Buddha arrives without leaving any of the other places he's been. He arrives also at Tushita, heaven, and radiates light in the 10 directions. This causes 10 more bodhisattvas to arrive, who also are singing verses to the Buddha. In book 25, the bodhisattva Vajradavaja enters samadhi, and in entering samadhi is blessed by 100,000 Buddhas. And then Vajradavaja teaches the 10 aspects of the bodhisattva's transfer of merit, parinamana. And this transfer of merit is what we're always doing, right? When we say, as we chant the Metta Sutra, we offer the merit for the safe crossing over of, or for the well-being of, right? We do that all the time. And that's the practice of transfer of merit, which, as far as I know, is not mentioned in the Pali sutras, because it doesn't quite fit in with other discussions of karma. How can you take your karma and give it to somebody else? You know, it doesn't make sense in the discussion of karma. And yet, in Mahayana Buddhism, we do just that. We just created good karma, you know, by, like this morning, when Jane dedicated the merit of our sitting in advance to the safety of the new baby. We were generating merit by sitting, and we could somehow give it away to somebody else and to bring about their well-being. We do that all the time. So this is taught in this sutra. And this book, 25, is the second longest book, and it was sometimes considered a separate sutra in its by itself, and Shantideva mentions it as a separate sutra. The sixth location is another heaven, the Paranirmita Vashavartin heaven. And this is another sutra that's often taken as a separate sutra, the Dashabhumika Sutra, the 10 Stages Sutra. This is pretty famous, which focuses on explaining the 10 bhumis, or the 10 levels or stages of the Bodhisattva path. And this was well known in India, and it was a main source for studying the stages of Bodhisattva life. And Shantideva talks about it and has a commentary to it. Vasubandhu has a commentary to it. There's a Chinese commentary to it that is attributed to Nagarjuna, that was translated by Kumarajiva. So this is an important chapter, the 10 Stages Sutra. The seventh and last of the locations is the Hall of Universal Light, which is an earlier one, but the Buddha goes back to this place. And Samantabhadra reappears, And now Samantabhadra becomes the main teacher of this assembly. And in book 27, Samantabhadra, who is the bodhisattva of activity, and this was Blanche Hartman's favorite bodhisattva, and lots of people are big fans of Samantabhadra, who I think is riding on an elephant. Is that right? Manjushri's on a lion. Samantabhadra's on an elephant. Samantabhadra teaches 10 types of meditative samadhi, meditative absorption, and the various powers that these 10 types bestow on those who master them. All kinds of supernatural powers. In book 28, Samantabhadra similarly discusses 10 supernormal powers mastered by bodhisattvas. You can read other people's minds and stuff like that. Very good, very handy power. And in book 29, he discusses 10 types of patience. Bodhisattvas need to have a tremendous amount of patience. So who knew that there were 10 different types of patience taught in this book? And the main thing is that you have the patience to accept the illusory and unarisen nature of reality. And this is also a teaching that's repeated in the Prajnaparamita in 8,000 lines. I often, whenever I think of that sutra, I think of the line, patience with dharmas that fail to be produced. So that's a very important quality of patience that bodhisattvas have to develop. Book 30 is taught by the Buddha himself. And it discusses the incalculable and infinite nature of the universe. And it gives you an exact number, I think, of the number of beings contained in this infinite universe. Books 31 and 32 are taught by the Bodhisattva Chittaraja. And they discuss time and space. Chittaraja states that time is relative and that in some worlds, an entire kalpa is the length of a day in other worlds. So this is anticipating contemporary, you know, Einstein and contemporary cosmology and quantum physics and stuff like that. Books 33 discusses the various qualities of the Buddhas, and 34, Samantabhadra teaches the attributes of the 10 bodies of the Buddha. Usually we know about the three bodies of the Buddha, you know, the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the three bodies, but this one, somehow there's 10 bodies. And this reminds me that, I forget where I read this, but a long time ago in some previous time when I was studying the Abhidhamsaka Sutra, I forget almost everything, but I do remember this one thing stuck in my mind, which was, and it might not even be true, because a lot of things that I remember turn out not to be true, but I'm remembering that the Avatamsaka Sutra was actually composed at a time in history when mathematicians were discovering the great virtues of zero. So the decimal system and the number 10 suddenly became very important to people in this region. And that's why you've probably noticed already, there's 10 of everything in the book, in the Avatamsaka Sutra. It's always 10. You can't have 6 or 5 or 7. It always is 10. Book 35 discusses the manifestation of the Buddhas in the world. Shakyamuni, Buddha, discusses his birth in Tushita heaven, where in that heaven he was, we learn in this particular sutra, that he was a bodhisattva named Vairochana. And Vairochana is sort of a cosmic Buddha. Shakyamuni, as we know, is an historical figure. But in the Avatamsaka Sutra, Shakyamuni and Vairochana are conflated. So some they use either name to refer to the cosmic Buddha. In book 36, Samantabhadra discusses the bodhisattva path in brief, a little summary, including 50 qualities that bodhisattvas must cultivate. Book 37 is another important text that was sometimes circulated as an independent sutra. And this one discusses the nature of Buddhahood and its manifestation in the world. Samantabhadra describes 10 aspects of Buddhahood in detail and affirms that Buddhahood is present in every particle in the physical universe, as well as in the body and mind of every living being. So I'll say that again, just in case you missed that. Buddhahood is present in every particle in the physical universe, as well as in the body and mind of every living being. And this is why in the Far East and in Zen, unlike in Indian Buddhism, sentient beings includes everything. Every physical piece of physical matter is a sentient being. They say that in China and Japan because every single particle of anything, whether it's mind or matter, is Buddhahood, including the bodies and the minds of every living being. The third longest book in the sutra is book 38, and it's called Disengagement from the World. And in it, Samantabhadra teaches on the Buddhist path to awakening. He asks 200 questions about the Bodhisattva's career and answers each one himself, giving 10 answers to each one. So that's what, 2,000 answers, right? And that's a comprehensive set of guidelines and practices for bodhisattvas. And they include 10 types of spiritual teachers, 10 kinds of effort, 10 sources of contentment, 10 ways of bringing sentient beings to maturity, 10 kinds of moral discipline, and on and on and on. 2,000. Okay, now we're at our book. That's what all happened before. Finally, we're getting to book 39. The longest and final culminating book of this whole vast edifice of spiritual teachings. Entering the Dharma realm, or entering the realm of reality. The Gandavyuha Sutra. It's the story of Bodhisattva Suddhana's spiritual pilgrimage. Suddhana is a young person who hears Manjushri's teaching, presumably earlier in the sutra when Manjushri was teaching, and this inspires him to seek awakening. So he goes to Manjushri, who sends him to his first teacher, and this begins his quest, which leads him to study under a series of teachers of all kinds. I think there are 59 teachers in all. Monastic teachers, lay teachers, women teachers, men teachers, fancy high-class people, beggars, poverty-stricken people, all kinds of people, including great bodhisattvas like Avalokiteshvara. And each teacher gives Suddhana their own special bodhisattva practice, which helps Suddhana to develop and deepen his wisdom. The final one is Maitreya, the Buddha of friendliness and kindness, the coming Buddha of the new era. I always think of that, you know. We have that to look forward to. If you think the world is getting very cruel, remember that the next eon, the Buddha is the Buddha of friendliness and loving kindness. So he meets Maitreya, and Maitreya guides him to enter a great tower. And the name of the tower is Matrix Adorned with the Splendors of Vairochana. So he goes into that tower, and here's where he has like the ultimate psychedelic vision of infinite worlds, each of which contains forms of Maitreya guiding beings to awakening. He also sees countless assemblies of beings with Buddhas teaching them, and he himself, Suddhana, is present in each one. Then he meets Manjushri and Samantabhadra, which confirm his attainment with further visions, including his final merging into the body of Samantabhadra. And the body of Samantabhadra contains the entire universe. So he merges into Samantabhadra's body, and this is the subject of various kinds of visualization practices in Tibetan Buddhism. Following Sudana's mystic union with Samantabhadra, Samantabhadra recites a popular series of verses which describe the bodhisattva path, the aspiration for enlightenment, and various bodhisattvas' vows. The core of these aspirations are the 10 great vows of Samantabhadra. So this is very famous. The vows of Samantabhadra are often chanted and repeated. The 10 vows of Samantabhadra are, number 1, to pay homage to all the Buddhas. Number 2, to glorify the qualities of all the Tathagatas or all the Buddhas. 3, to make ample offerings to all the Buddhas. 4, to confess and repent all one's sins. 5, to rejoice in the merits of others. 6, always to request the preaching of the Dharma. 7, to entreat enlightened beings to remain in the world. 8, always to study the teachings of the Buddha. 9, always to respond to sentient beings according to their needs, not according to your ideas. And 10, to dedicate all merits to sentient beings that they may achieve Buddhahood. And so these are the vows of Samantabhadra. So, this last part was very popular, it says here, in Wikipedia tells us, in East Asia. So, phew, thanks to Wikipedia. You can read all of that if you forget any of it, if you didn't remember it all. A lot of it went over your head, which of course it did. It's all down there in Wikipedia. Now, how are we going to study this sutra? Well, I'm not sure, you know. It's a little bit, how are we going to do this? Are we even foolish to undertake it? Possibly when we're done, we may say, yes, that was not a good idea. We shouldn't be doing this. But let's try. So I'm thinking that we will spend 12 weeks on this sutra. That means August, September, October. Let's see if we can stand it. So I'm thinking that if you divide the number of pages in the Gandavyuha divided by 12, you come to roughly about 35 pages a week. And that's a lot of reading. So those of you who want to do this, you kind of have to make up your mind that this will be, you wouldn't do it like you do homework, you know, like, oh, geez, the seminar's coming in a couple hours, I better cram my reading in. You'd have like almost a daily practice of reading so many pages a day. Because it's really inspiring, but it's very hard to read. So much repetition and stuff. So anybody who wants to do that will basically, about 35 pages a day, and then you'll finish by the end of October. Now, so I don't know how we'll do this. I don't think it makes sense, you know, for me to try to explain. I mean, I guess I could summarize what happens in 35 pages every month, but I don't know if that's worthwhile. I'll think about it. I think it might be a better thing, and we could try this and see how we like it. It might be a better thing to just read the sutra out loud, especially during those weeks when we're in person as well as online, like we will be next week. So next week, maybe that'll be, we'll try that. We'll maybe just read the sutra for like an hour or something like that. And then basically we'll all sit in meditation and listen to the sutra. And you might want to do that if you decide to read it or try to read it, you might want to read it aloud rather than read it as you usually read stuff. In fact, it's very possible that some of you will think to yourselves, you know, I could do this with a friend. So maybe you'll get a hold of one or two people in everyday Zen or not in everyday Zen and say, let's have a Zoom meeting on this day of the week and spend an hour or two reading the sutra. We'll take turns. You might want to do that. That way, if you decide you'd like to do this, that way it will keep you on task if you choose somebody else to read with. It's just a thought. And of course, we're not reading the way we usually read. This is like scriptural reading, spiritual reading. It's not reading for information. It's not reading for meaning, really. It's reading just to let the words go in, just to have an experience of these words in this vision of the sutra. So, even though I've gone on now for much longer than anybody should go on, I'm going to go on longer because I'm going to start by reading you the opening of the sutra for, I don't know, 10 minutes or even as much as 15 minutes, because I want you to hear it. And that'll sort of start you off, and you'll see what you think. Since we're all online, it's easy for anybody to disappear if they want to, so I don't feel too badly about doing this. If we were all in one room, it would be hard to get away, so I'll do this. Here's the opening of the Avatamsaka Sutra. Book 39, Entry into the Realm of Reality. Thus have I heard. And that's, of course, Ananda speaking, because all sutras begin with Ananda saying that, because Ananda's hearing what the Buddha said. And he always tells us where this happened and who was there. Thus have I heard. At one time the Blessed One was in Sravashti, in a magnificent pavilion in the garden of Anadapindika in the Jada Grove, together with 5,000 enlightening beings, which means bodhisattvas, led by Samantabhadra, the universally good enlightening being, and Manjushri. Their names were endowed with perspicacious knowledge, endowed with essential knowledge, endowed with unattached knowledge, endowed with blossoming knowledge, endowed with sun-like knowledge, endowed with moon-like knowledge, endowed with undefiled knowledge, endowed with adamantine knowledge, endowed with unemotional knowledge, endowed with radiant knowledge, star-like, mountain-like, jewel-like, unattached, flower-like, undefiled, sun-like, resplendent, dispassionate, radiant, jewel energy, great energy, knowledge, thunderbolt energy, undefiled energy, energy of the Sun of Truth, virtue mountain energy, energy of the light of knowledge, universal glorious energy, universal light energy, earth matrix, sky matrix, lotus calyx, jewel matrix, sun matrix, matrix of virtues, matrix of the ocean of truths, matrix of radiance, matrix of origination, matrix of lotus splendor, good eye, pure eye, undefiled eye, unobstructed eye, all-seeing eye, perceptive eye, observant eye, lotus eye, adamantine eye, jewel eye, space eye, universal eye, celestial crown, crown of jewels which give birth to all Buddhas, crown beyond all worlds, all-illumining crown, invincible crown, crown of jewels illuminating all things in the cosmos, crown of the essence of enlightenment, radiant crown, crown of jewels inset with the lion thrones of all Buddhas, crown illuminating the space of the whole cosmos, crest of Lord Brahma, crest of the Lord of Dragons, crest of lights emanated by all Buddhas, crest of the essence of enlightenment, crest of most excellent jewels of the sound of the ocean of all vows, crest of a spew of jewels emanating the halos of all Buddhas, crest adorned with jewels showing the non-differentiation of all surfaces of space, crest covered with a net of the finest jewels representing the lights magically produced by all Buddhas, crest of sounds of the wheel of teaching of all Buddhas, crest uttering the names of everything in past, present, and future, great light, undefiled light, light of undefiled energy, jewel light, dispassionate light, star light, light of truth, light of peace, sunlight, magical light, celestial light, torch of virtue, torch of knowledge, torch of truth, torch of super knowledge, torch of light, flower torch, torch of enlightenment, torch of Brahma, torch of universal illumination, jewel torch, Brahma sound, ocean sound, earth roaring sound, voice of a world leader, sound of mountains colliding, voice pervading all universes, sound emitted by the ocean of all universes, sound of crushing all armies of demons, sound emitted by all didactic devices of great compassion, sound of stopping the sufferings of all worlds and giving comfort. Born of truth, born of excellence, born of knowledge, born of a polar mountain of virtue, born of radiance of virtues, born of splendor, born of universal illumination, born of great kindness, born of a store of knowledge, born of the family of Buddhas, glowing splendor, preeminent splendor, exalted splendor, radiant splendor, splendor of truth, splendor of the moon, splendor of the sky, jewel splendor, splendor of brilliance, splendor of knowledge, mountain lord, lord of truth, lord of the world, lord Brahma, lord of the masses, lord of gods, lord of peace, immutable lord, mighty lord, eminent lord, supremely tranquil voice, unobstructed voice, voice of earth, voice of the ocean, voice of thunder, voice of the light of truth, voice of space, voice of the roots of goodness of all beings, voice of encouragement of all past vows, jewel awareness, knowing awareness, space-like awareness, unattached awareness, undefiled awareness, purified awareness, awareness of all times, powerful awareness, all-observing awareness, awareness of ways to the reality realm. So that's some of the people who were there. Beginning with these, there were 5,000 great enlightening beings, all of whom had undertaken the acts and vows of universally good enlightening beings and were unhindered in their sphere of action, pervading all Buddha lands. They manifested boundless bodies going to all Buddhas. The sphere of their unobstructed eye was pure, seeing the miracles of all Buddhas. They had attained to infinity in revelations, ceaselessly approaching the entries into the enlightenment of all Buddhas. Their illumination was measureless, having attained the light of knowledge of principles and didactic devices of the ocean of teachings of all Buddhas. They could explain virtues forever through purity of intellectual powers. They were unfettered in the purity of the realm of knowledge vaster than space, being able to appear in the world in any physical form they wished. They were clear-sighted, knowing the realm of beings to be void of beings or souls. They had space-like knowledge pervading all universes with a net of lights. There were also 500 hearers. So these are not bodhisattvas. These are followers who have not yet entered into the Mahayana teachings. There were also 500 hearers with great spiritual powers, all of them perfectly aware of the essence of true reason and the principles of truth. They had arrived at direct witness of the limit of reality, had penetrated the nature of phenomena, had gotten out of the ocean of existence and into the realm of space of those who have arrived at suchness, had stopped their propensities and habits and were beyond regression, dwelled in the abode of non-attachment and non-obstruction, and were in a state as tranquil as space, had cut off all doubt in Buddha, and had entered the path intent on the ocean of Buddha knowledge. There were also world rulers who had served past Buddhas, who had accomplished the welfare and happiness of all beings, who were unsolicited benefactors, who had accomplished the protection of others, who had entered into the bliss of the highest knowledge in the world, who were never indifferent towards sentient beings, who issued from the realm of the Buddha teaching, who had accomplished the preservation of the Buddha teaching, who vowed to sustain the lineage of Buddhas, who were oriented toward birth in the family of Buddhas, who sought omniscient knowledge. At that time, it occurred to these enlightening beings and their companions, to those hearers of great spiritual powers, and to those world rulers and their companions. This is what occurred to them. It is not possible for celestials or humans to understand or enter into or focus on or know or cognize or think about or perceive clearly or distinguish or elucidate or establish in the body and mind of other beings the sphere of the enlightened, the realm of knowledge of the enlightened, the basis, the power, the fearlessness, the concentration, the state, the mastery, the body, or the knowledge of the enlightened, except by the support, the magic, the empowerment, and the past vows of the enlightened, by having the qualities of roots of goodness perfected by past Buddhas, by being in the charge of spiritual benefactors, by purification of faith, liberative means and knowledge, by attainment of illumination of highest devotion, by purification of the higher will of enlightening beings, and by the proceeding of the higher will on the undertaking of realizing omniscience. May the Buddha show us, we enlightening beings and sentient beings, according to our dispositions, because we're all different, according to our different dispositions, our different mental capacities, our different orientations, different perceptions, different languages, different attainments, different masteries, different stages, different purity of faculties, different mental efforts, different realms of thought, focus on different qualities of Buddhahood, and orientation toward various teachings, his past procedure toward omniscience. May he show us, despite all our differences, his past procedure toward omniscience, and show us his past undertaking of the vows of enlightening beings, his past purification of the spheres of the transcendent ways of enlightening beings, the wonder of his past accession to the stages of enlightening beings, his past fulfillment of the undertakings of the spheres of practices of enlightening beings, the appearance of his past accomplishment of the vehicle of enlightening beings, his past purification of the embellishments of the path of enlightening beings, the arrays of his past accomplishments of the ocean of ways of emancipation of enlightening beings, the splendors of the oceans of spiritual transformation he experienced in the past as an enlightening being, the oceans of his past efforts as an enlightening being, the oceans of his spiritual transformations on the threshold of perfect enlightenment, the power of his spiritual manifestations in turning the wheel of truth of a Buddha, the oceans of spiritual transformations involved in Buddha land purification, the Buddha's methods of guiding sentient beings to liberation, the Buddha's lordship of the city of principles of omniscience, the Buddha's revelations of the path of all sentient beings, the Buddha's transfigurations, entering into the states of all beings, the Buddha's receiving of gifts from beings, the Buddha's presentation of teachings on right giving to all sentient beings, the Buddha's projections of the image of Buddha onto the mental states of all beings, the Buddha's displays of miracles to sentient beings, the Buddha's miracles of teaching and admonishing sentient beings, and the Buddha's inconceivable manifestations of the realm of concentration to Buddhas of all beings. May the Buddhas show us these things. Then the Buddha, knowing what they were all thinking, entered the concentration known as the coming forth of the lion, a world-illumining manifestation of which the body is great compassion. The entryway is great compassion. The guide is great compassion. The means of access to the sky of truth is great compassion. As soon as the Buddha had entered this concentration, the magnificent pavilion became boundlessly vast. The surface of the earth appeared to be made of indestructible diamond. The surface of the ground covered with a net of all the finest jewels, strewn with flowers of many jewels, with enormous gems strewn all over. It was adorned with sapphire pillars, with well-proportioned decorations of world-illumining pearls of the finest water, with all kinds of gems combined in pairs, adorned with heaps of gold and jewels, with a dazzling array of turrets, arches, chambers, windows, and balconies, made of all kinds of precious stones, arrayed with jewels in the forms of all world rulers, and embellished with oceans of worlds of jewels, covered with all kinds of jewels, with flags, banners, and pennants flying in front of all the portals, the adornments pervading the cosmos with a network of light. Outside the grounds, where the inexpressibly vast circle of the assembly was, there was a magnificent array of balustrades, and in each direction was a stairway consisting of a mass of jewels adorned superbly in a well-ordered fashion. Also in the Jada Grove and Buddha fields, as numerous as atoms in untold Buddha fields, all became coextensive, vastly expanded by the power of Buddha. There appeared varied arrays of all kinds of jewels, plains variously set with untold jewels, fences of uncountable jewels set around, and palm trees of various jewels arrayed in rows. Also in those lands were innumerable rivers of fragrant water, winding endlessly, filled with perfumed water, with turbulent rapids of flowers of all jewels, whirling to the right, producing the sounds of the sayings of all Buddhas. There were also inconceivable rows of jewel-white lotuses, trees adorned with arrays of lotus blossoms made of jewels, as well as inconceivable numbers of rows of towers of various gems enveloped in nets of all kinds of jewels, arrays of countless jewels radiating webs of light, countless arrays of all kinds of jewels, of celestial chariots of jewels, and arrays of chests of all kinds of incense, releasing banks of all fragrances. There also stood innumerable emblems of jewels, emblems of cloth, emblems surfaced with jewels, emblems of flowers, emblems of ornaments, emblems of garlands, emblems of nets of small bells made of all kinds of jewels, emblems of parasols of the finest gems, emblems of jewels pervading everywhere with their radiance, emblems of the finest jewels resounding with the names of all Buddhas, emblems of the finest jewels of leonine splendor, emblems of the finest jewels bespeaking the past efforts of all Buddhas, emblems of reflections of all objects, arrays of emblems of the finest jewels, well-distributed arrays of ornaments of all kinds of emblems, standing in all quarters. The entire sky of the Jada Grove was also adorned with inconceivable celestial cloud palaces, countless clouds of trees of all fragrances, untold mountains of all kinds. Go away, unknown caller. Of all kinds of magnificent arrays, untold sweet sounds of clouds, of music and songs of praise of all Buddhas, untold clouds of jewel lotuses, untold jewel lion thrones spread with celestial jewel cloth, with enlightening beings sitting on them, singing beautiful, eulogies of Buddhas, individual pearly clouds in the forms of celestial lords facing the earth, untold clouds of webs of brilliant white pearls, untold clouds of towers of ruddy pearls, and untold clouds of diamond raining ornaments. What was the reason for that? Well, to find out, you'll have to read on yourself, because I'm stopping there, because then it tells you why all that was happening. So if you get this book, I just read, that was a few pages. That was page 11 through the top of page 15. On the top of page 15, you can start there with the paragraph that begins, "What was the reason for that?" So that's sets the stage and gives you a flavor for what this sutra is like. And as you can see, it's not your ordinary reading project. I've been reading along and having a great time. It's an experience, and I hope that you will find it in your heart and in the possibility of your daily life to take it up and read some of it. I think surely in every Dharma seminar we'll read at least some of it if we don't read to a great extent. So I've used up most of the time. I knew that I would. So maybe now we can just open the floor to any comments that people have, because we won't have time to go into groups. We'll certainly do that next week. But I did want to sort of, I always do this at the beginning of any seminar, download a bunch
recording
of
stopped.
A bunch of context so that you can have it.